Hey, you're listening to the Canadian Asian Missional Podcast. This is episode 5, and today we're going to be talking about the past, present, and future of Canadian Asian churches. Where did we all come from? Where are we now? And where are we headed? Let's do this! Man, it's exciting to be back. It's great to be here with Shu and Bernard. How are you guys doing?
Okay.
Yeah.
This is a huge topic, and I think we can learn a lot from where we've come from, where we've started from, how it's influenced us now as churches, and perhaps the different perspectives of which we are approaching church. So, how did Canadian Asian churches get started?
I'm sure there is a lot more to this answer, but I guess one of the biggest reason for Canadian Asian churches is immigration.
Yeah.
Like there was mass immigration through the various decades prior to this second generation that sits here together, this Chinese second generation. You know, like one of my friends who I had a lot of great conversation with, she was a PhD candidate at University of Toronto. Her name's Helen. We're sad that she recently passed away, but she was someone who just has so much insight and question in her research about it because she was looking at the study of the Chinese migration from Hong Kong. This group of immigrations in the like late 80s, early 90s that was immigrating to Canada, like brought in this culture plus ecclesial way of life. And she was kind of like looking into like, how does that shape the identity of someone that's grown up in that kind of context where, you know, like this group of people who have a Christian influence from Hong Kong coming to Canada, which at that point was probably still quite Christendom, and figuring out this kind of identity. So I think for many Asians, it would have been similar.
Sure.
The narrative of migration, immigration, they coming in, and then forming communities that, you know, trying to preserve tradition, but also, you know, have this common thing of church that they gather together.
Right. So kind of almost starting out of a need for forming a community, a faith.
Yes, a place to belong, a place to, you know, practice your food, your language, your common roots.
Sure.
And in Canada, you're able to express that. And like we were talking about in, I think, a few episodes ago, about Canada giving you that space to practice your own culture and your identity, and you could be Christian and practicing as Korean Christian over there.
Right.
And
you
won't be necessarily disturbed, and you can speak in Korean and you can do all the cultural stuff and not be kind of bothered or have to do it differently.
Mm-hmm.
Be enculturated in another way or by the Eurocentric Canadian kind of church or something like that. You could do your own thing.
Sure. And as we're talking about immigration too, thinking about Christians who are coming from countries where you're not able to practice and you're not able to freely express your Christian faith, what must it have been like to be coming to a country that has that openness and so many opportunities in which to be the church together?
And I find it interesting that it's like Hong Kong, for example, where I think most of our parents come from at this table. It was a British colony that kind of, you know, got that from China. Actually, you know, a lot of that turnover is going to happen then, I think, officially in 2050 or something like that. I can't remember. But that church influence came from that kind of European colonization.
Yeah.
And now, even through that, the Hong Kong immigrants who come to Canada are bringing that European influence back to Canada.
Yeah.
To reach out to their kind of Chinese church. It's really interesting.
That's a fascinating heritage, right? Like it's almost like it was something that was brought over from Britain that affected the church in Hong Kong. They're coming over to Canada, and when they started the churches here, that's affected the way in which the church exists and is shaped here, right?
The British, Chinese, Canadian church.
I feel like we need to start a whole new podcast just to address this issue.
Bramp.
The no, Bramp. I don't. British Canadian Asia. Yeah. That'd be really, really interesting.
But it's fascinating too, you know, what the immigrations of people and like from the various countries, both Asian and outside of Asia, when they come to Canada and what their perception of Canada is. I find that a lot of the conversations that I have with people, almost immediately they think that Canada is like the land of the Christians.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. Like even today, like
more than the States.
I don't know if it's more than the States. Maybe like they,
depending where in the States,
maybe they see that we're one, you know?
Oh, okay.
Right. Like I had neighbors that came from the Middle East, and when we were chatting, and they said, yeah, we want to become Canadians. One of the first things that they did, it's they went and checked out a church.
Yeah.
Because they think, wow, like, this is what Canadians do, right? It's like, some.
Integrating into the culture.
Right.
I thought we watch hockey or go.
Tim Hortons, but that's not go
there. There's your cultural experience.
We go skating.
Let's not go there. But I wonder, like how much of that is also part of the immigration experience for many Asian cultures. When they came here thinking, like, well, what does that look like? What is Canadian?
You know, to kind of follow along this journey of the Canadian Asian church is to see how those who have immigrated over here have taken on some of the perspectives and some of the traditions from Canada. How has that also shaped the church?
Because I'll share a little bit from my own experience. Like, I immigrated to Canada, like, I think, 89. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in Hong Kong with the Catholic Church, actually. And when we came over to Canada, we were actually looking for a Chinese Catholic Church. Because it feels more at home.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
I actually refused to go to a, you know, like...
A Protestant church?
No.
I didn't know where you were going with this.
Back in the days.
I didn't know where you were going with this.
Protestants.
We're
out of here.
We were actually, you know, like...
You were going through a reformation of yourself.
We actually had to drive to go to a Chinese Catholic church because there weren't many. And I remember there was like walking distance, like mainline Catholic churches, like, you know, just a local Catholic church. And I just felt like really out of place.
Right.
You know, like in the other episode, like I was an award-winning altar boy.
Yeah.
Well, that was with a Chinese Catholic church. You know, like we had a 100, you know, altar boys, Chinese altar boys mainly.
Sure.
And like there is a certain kind of affinity in the immigration.
Sure.
And when you leave your homeland, like there's, you're just learning like who you are all over again. So
yeah, but then that's why it's easiest to come to Canada. And if there's a cluster of people who are like you or like-minded,
yeah,
it's of course more comfortable, and you stick with that group of people.
Sure.
And then you try to kind of extend past your borders a little bit.
Right. And yeah. then when you begin to realize that, you know, Canada's not like mini Hong Kong or like mini Korea or mini Vietnam, like then you begin to like, oh, like it's different here.
Sure. What were some of the factors that you noticed that, you know, that made you feel uncomfortable or that you didn't really quite fit in into the Catholic churches here and were looking for a Chinese Catholic church?
Well, I mean, when I first immigrated, like my English sucked.
Sure. Yeah. My language is a huge thing, right?
My English still sucks, by the way. Like I have poor grammar. But yeah, language is a huge one. Just not being able to understand like what the priest is talking about, and just kind of like, I'm used to my Chinese hymns.
Right.
But, you mean it wasn't in Latin?
No.
Oh, bringing it back to the old school.
That's way old school. We have vernacular Chinese.
All right. As we're kind of moving ahead in time, like how do you guys see the Canadian Asian churches right now? What is the present state of Canadian Asian churches?
I think it's in a weird spot where it's not quite what it was in the past because of, I think, the people who started the church. And okay, this is only speaking in, like, right now I'm in Toronto.
Right.
Like I know in Vancouver and in the prairies too, there's like... There were people there for a long time as well. So, but it's like we're, at least from where I'm at, I could say in my context, I could see people who are now retiring or even passed away, and they're the ones who started these churches around the area. they're having a hard time now because now their children are the ones, the children who are adults, like older, like I even say 40, 50s, mm-hmm. and even younger than that, you know, like our age, like, and you're starting to see this shift now between people who started the church, how they probably envisioned it. And now it's coming to, yeah, just this place of, I want to call it friction, because now it's becoming a bit more, I guess, Canadian.
Sure.
In value, in thinking. And we're getting this from various places, our school education, our seminary education,
yeah.
our understanding and more self-awareness, and then even more so through the internet, the advent of internet, where you can mm-hmm. learn about everything.
Yep.
So you're just hitting now a place where everyone knows a lot about a lot of things, and they're questioning a lot of things, and now that's kind of hitting that immigrant base, you know, Asian church, and it's not like necessarily at all how it was when they first planted it. And I think
right.
that's the one of the issues that we're dealing with.
Yeah, maybe before we move ahead, you were talking about, you know, those churches that started off in a certain way or how they were planted. How did those churches grow? Like, what were the main factors in which those churches started to kind of form a community?
If I were just to be a punk, it was immigration.
Yeah, immigration's, I think, yeah. a huge part of it. Yeah,
it's like transfer growth from
yeah,
those
it's
places.
Like, it's immigration, but then it's like, you know, there are programs that invite people who are immigrating to be like, hey, like, you know, like, we're a bunch of Chinese, come hang out with us.
Right.
Do ESL.
And out of the fellowships that you kind of form, you know, and you share the gospel in those times. You have like these gospel tracts or evangelistic events where you invite people to.
Which is still happening today.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, I mean, we still have immigration, just not in the same rate as, you know, when these early churches were formed.
Yeah.
But I think that the idea of community, like the need for community, was a big part of it too. And I'm looking back at my parents' generation, and the Chinese church got connected with so many different people is because, you know, we talked about in the past about how people just kind of gravitate toward people of their same background, right? And so if you found another family that was a Chinese background or Hong Kong immigrant, and you're like, hey, let's get to know each other, and then you can bring them to church, like, then for the Christians, they would say, hey, you know, we have this community that's part of the church, maybe come check it out. And those families get connected through there. Hey, that's one way in which people kind of start growing together, right?
Like, I wonder too, like, when the immigration to, like, Canada and North America as a whole, if there was actually a better view on church than today.
Hmm.
That
interesting.
Qualify that better.
Well, like, I mean, not better, but like,
there's it's just different.
There's like a positive view to church.
Okay. Oh, okay.
There's less of a mistrust. There's less of these like scandals.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's probably happening, but
oh, man.
But just people don't know about it, and yeah. they don't have such a negative view.
Like, what were some of the things that caused those perceptions, like the mistrust and the negative views?
Well, this is sometimes the view of church is just like, you know, they just want your money.
Sure.
You know, like money's being embezzled and all, like, you know, all these negative stuff.
Religion is just a crutch.
Press. Right.
Yeah, sure.
You know.
But I wonder, like, if back then there was less view on that and
Christendom.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And then the view, like, you know, many of those who immigrated were from probably the boomer generation who were having kids, and they wanted them to grow up with good morals and character, and church becomes a space.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of engages that.
Sure.
And one more thing is that when they were, a lot of our parents, I'm sure, when they were coming over, pioneering a lot of things, doing
yeah.
a lot of odd jobs, working their butt off, getting in school,
yeah.
kind of thing. And community helps with supporting you through that.
Sure.
Right.
And I think
networking, right?
Yeah.
That's part of it.
Gravitated definitely that way.
And it's such an interesting thing because the context of an immigrant family is so different than the generation now, right? Like, a lot of them may have even been fleeing from their country. I know some
yeah.
families left Hong Kong because they were worried about what was going to happen when China had, you know, reintegrated Hong Kong back into, you know, its nation. And that was a huge thing. And, you know, fleeing from other countries as well. Like, my wife works in immigration, and there's so many factors of, like, of oppression or just worry about their own safety and fleeing for their life because they are Christian from some Asian country. That might not have been seen from kind of the bigger ones like China or Korea, but like there's a lot of other Asian countries that,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, that
persecuted for your faith.
Persecuted for their faith.
Yeah.
That was huge, right?
China is still, that's still a reality in China.
Sure, mainland,
right now. Yeah.
Mainland. But anyways, as we're kind of like starting to move toward the present, What are some of the traditions that you guys have seen that are still impacting and affecting churches in the Canadian Asian context now?
Patriarchy.
Yeah?
You just have instilled into most Asian cultures where the patriarch dictates, and even if they don't even intentionally do it, it's just assumed.
Mm.
It's just already part of the reality of your culture.
Sure.
And it impacts the church. It impacts, you know, how things were. And it impacts even from a British colonial thing that reinforced that. A British church, you know, European kind of church thing that goes to, let's just say, Hong Kong and reinforces that back mm-hmm. now here. So we see that. And not to say that men can't lead or something like that. Men shouldn't lead. It's that also, can women also lead? How do we learn how to do that together? How do we sure. do this intergenerationally? How do we disciple to the point where Paul wants Timothy to lead? I've seen that a lot, you know, not just Chinese church. I know the Korean church, the Filipino church, a lot yeah. of the people dealing with that kind of issue, it kind of feels like it holds them down a little bit sometimes.
Sure, sure.
I totally share what she was saying, because I think this is part of the conversation and the tension that we are facing today. And that's the layers of the Asian Canadian church,
mm.
where it's the generational coming together. It's the passing of leadership, of, you know, like we joke in some of our conversations about, like, what are we going to do with all these giant buildings?
Sure.
Right? Like, what are we going to do with them? For sure, there's good use for them, but culturally and contextually, what does that look like?
Wow. Amazing. So now that we're looking at the present state of the church, what would you guys say are some of the defining factors that make up the Canadian Asian church today, as you guys have seen it?
This might only be like Chinese, Taiwanese, and Korean churches, but softball.
Yeah, I think it's the biggest league, and it's bigger than like other leagues.
The
right?
Chinese like league has 80 plus teams.
80 plus teams.
Like, I mean, seniors and juniors, but that's a lot.
We should televise this. There's just that many games going on. Yeah. So speaking about softball, I think there was always that intention from the softball leagues that it would be an outreach, that it would connect with others. And yet at the same time, it's been kind of this staple, and it's become this tradition and expected, but it may have also lost kind of the main drive and purpose of why it existed in the first place, right?
See, I'll play devil's advocate on that sure. a little bit. That, and you guys know how I feel about softball, but I can also see, though, if you actually connect that to the past, it was created more for community's sake than necessarily outreach.
Yeah, absolutely, right? Like, for sure.
There's a need for community. People like to play, some younger people like to play softball. So let's have a Christian softball community thing, and people can have a closer connection, spend regular time together that way. But, you know, as you're mentioning, I'm sure, which is kind of part of the issue, and even what we're trying to bring up in this podcast, is where's the mission?
Right.
And not right. not to take away that one of my deacons, he always tells me, hey, I became a Christian through Christian softball. And I'm like, that's yes. fantastic. I believe God can work through anything, yes. buddy, my friend. Yes. I totally believe. But it's just like, but, you know, we want to see these things happen.
With greater intention.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, with greater sure. purpose. Yeah. yeah.
So, but like, I do see that was just kind of like passed on from our inherited from where the last generation was coming from. And this is just the new kind of community niche.
And it's so interesting, because where did softball even come from? It's not an Asian thing. This was totally integrated from Canadian culture, right? I'd never, you know... In my trips around, like, you know, in China or Hong Kong, Japan, or
I don't know, man. The Japanese and the Taiwanese baseball, are pretty awesome.
They are. They are.
Yeah, they are.
They're great at baseball, but like softball is a completely different thing.
It's like NFL, CFL.
Yeah, exactly.
Bigger ball.
Just to kind of play off that too, the pushback against that is to hear stories of how it's been so competitive now, and how so many people are focused on the winning aspect, bringing in ringers from the Toronto Blue Jays. Well, maybe not from the Toronto Blue Jays. That would be amazing.
Just the farm team.
Just the farm team, right? But I mean, like, people are like, 80 teams. And I hear so many stories about, like, man, I kind of got out of Christian softball because it just kind of went off the rails, and it just became, you know, bring in all these guys that are really great at it, and we just want to win. And I was like, you know, I hear that, you know, but what Shu, you're saying too, is like, what if it could be you know, brought back to that intention of building community, brought back to connecting with others, being on the mission of God together, meeting needs. Like, what would that be like, right?
It's interesting, you know, I'm looking at, you know, the history behind it, and it says that in 1980, a group of Chinese churches from downtown Toronto made an effort to connect with each other and foster fun and fellowship using the game of softball.
Mm. Ooh, my old church.
Yeah, there you go. And that's like almost 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Right?
Hmm.
That's 38 years ago.
And the purpose has changed. And yet that's still part of the history and still part of the mission and vision.
And maybe that is. It's just, it's okay to network between churches, because at times I think part of our issue in present day is that Asian churches are siloed, that we don't really talk to.
I think all churches
are the most siloed time in the whole week, right? The church, I can't remember
who
was saying that.
John Perkins, that's what he said.
You know, speaking about, you know, being siloed and how churches identify themselves and how churches are connected with each other, do you guys see the Canadian Asian churches identify themselves as part of a denomination?
I've always said this. I've always joked about this. I think I even put it in my dissertation that whatever Chinese church you're a part of, it's first Chinese. It's not part of a denomination. You could be Chinese Baptist, Chinese Anglican, Chinese whatever you want to be, but
Pentecostal Alliance.
Yeah.
And I think we could say this across the board for like other Asian churches, Korean churches, Japanese churches.
Yeah, the denomination is not as much focused as much as the ethnicity and the culture from that ethnicity.
Yeah.
Or even the Christian ethnicity.
And that's a shaping factor.
Yeah, fusion of it.
But I wonder if that's sort of changing, though, with the new, you know, second generation Gen X and Y and, I don't know,
Z and everything.
Because, like, there's an awareness of the doctrines and the traditions that shape who they are. And it's true, like, historically, Asian churches don't have such an affinity with their denomination. But I wonder if that's changing. And I think that's changing.
Sure.
I think there's more of an awareness of, like, where they're coming from with these kind of traditions.
I don't know. I don't think so. Like, I agree there's some people who are thinking about it. The people that I encounter, a lot of times, it's just I want to be a Jesus follower or something like that. Yeah. They'll make more general statements. But then, like, there are people who are interested, and actually one of the things that I find is part of our tradition is more about what we're against than
for
what
sure.
for.
For sure.
For sure.
I can see that.
So it's just, maybe I've seen that, like, I've seen people who are like, we shouldn't be about this. We got to hold this understanding of the Bible, make sure it's very clear, this doctrine. And I've seen the more fundamentalist approach.
So maybe it's not so much denominationalism, but more of a theological leaning.
Sure. I think some people.
Yeah.
But I find the average person, until they have that kind of Jesus moment, but I want to say more Bible moment.
<It's> Epiphany?
Like, intellectual Bible moment. It's like, they're just like...
Because, like, you have to see Jesus in the Bible, right? That's the only place you can see Jesus.
Nope. Tradition never showed that. You know, we never passed it on orally ever. Okay.
Right.
Only written it down. Okay. Maybe this is a segue now towards another thing that we hold very much into our tradition, even presently, is Sunday school.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a pedagogical learning experience that needs to be cultivated and developed.
Yeah.
And there's good things to that, for sure.
For sure.
But it's when it's become, the vehicle that we use has to be Sunday in a classroom lecture setting is where you get your information. And fine, now I would even say... Small groups is now where people are trying to, you know, bring it to. But small groups now just become that next form of
Sunday school?
Of Sunday school.
Sure, sure.
Essentially, one person talks and...
Usually it's Tim Keller. With Gospel in Life.
If Tim, you're listening to the podcast...
We love you.
We love you. Thank you for all that you've done.
Timmy K.
Yeah. Are there any other defining factors that you guys have seen as part of the modern day Canadian Asian church?
I think the family unit is still very strong, like the nuclear family unit that, you know, let's strengthen families, or like even that's become political, right?
Sure.
On a lot of levels, but it's very not reflective towards what's actually happening in our culture, our society at large.
Right.
That the nuclear family is not the only type of family that exists, and whether we kind of prop it up either unintentionally,
sure,
it does affect people.
also like nuclear family within the same space, I find. I think still the current Canadian Asian church, like it'll be like the parents still want their kids to be in the same church.
Sure.
It doesn't matter. Like, it'd just be like, just stay at the church.
Sure. You know, or come to church. Or come to church. Like, I've heard lots of families, like, you know, the when their kids stop going to church, there's less of an engagement of, like, where they are in their faith or where they are in their life. But it's like, come back to church, right? Like, everything is like, come back to church, right?
Yeah. That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Come back to Jesus.
Which they equate. Sure. Right? Like attendance at church is equated with faithfulness, right?
But not the Jesus on that church, though. It has to be this church.
Whoa, and that's a whole other can of worms. But we will talk about that another day.
One thing that one of my family members, I won't name names, but has told me, and I've taken it to heart because I do believe it, it's very true towards this kind of Asian tradition of church, is that a lot of time the mountaintop vision, even though it was unsaid, I'm not saying they're proclaiming this in their mission statement, okay? Sure. A lot of these Asian churches, it's almost like we want the three generations or four generations of people in our family to worship together. And that's when we, you know, like, yeah, God is really glorified.
That's
and
we're, apex.
You know, yeah. And I'm like, wow, that's a great thing.
Sure.
But it's also, I think, a very narrow view of what our mission is.
Right, right. It's very interesting, you know, as we're kind of going through all of these conversations, I think inherently what we're saying is none of these things are bad, right? It's not bad to want many generations of our families to worship together. Sunday school is not inherently bad. You know, softball is not inherently bad. Like, so much can happen through them. God can work miracles and work powerfully through them. And yet at the same time, once they've lost their intention, when they've been disconnected from the mission of God, when they have been disconnected with what it means to be faithful as a Christ follower, things can go kind of all wonky, right?
Yeah, for sure. One of the conversations I had recently with a Tyndale professor, Don Gertz, and we were talking about churches and planting and like what church and mission is about. And I think it's not just a reflection of the Canadian Asian church, but church as a whole. Like we seem to hold the form of church very tightly.
Mm, that's but a good not, way of putting it, sure.
Not the theologies behind it and not the movement of mission in the context that right. is around us.
Right.
And so when we hold the form so tightly, it's just so hard to see outside of it.
Sure.
And Asian churches, that is a reality. We hold a certain form of church so tightly because we've invested so many years in it.
Yeah.
And which is amazing. And I thank all the faithful older generations who pour, you know, your blood, your sweat, your money, your, you know, some of you guys, your time. But perhaps we need to learn to loosen up our grip on the form.
Or maybe even just to remember what led to that form. You know, we briefly talked about ecclesiology a little bit here in our podcast before, but...
And what's ecclesiology?
Like the theology of the church, right? Like how many people are even thinking about issues of why should we be going to church? But they're more focused on we should be going to church, right? The form.
As Bernard, as you're saying, the immigrant Asian church is set on its form because a lot of it is just that there's more of a pull to be faithful, but the structure is not the be-all, end-all.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And unless there's a self-awareness of what, or a self-assessment of what's happening, and you know, it's almost like you always have to take an inventory of what's going on. You have to reflect on what's going on. Yeah. But it's easier to have, here's a system that will just keep running, or a system that we think will just continue running, and it'll be the legacy. But the thing is that, in my head, when I'm thinking through, if we're truly Canadian Asian and you're getting to your second, third, fourth generation and you want those people to lead the church in the future,
right?
You're giving up the power or what you thought it was to collaborate with this next gen or this people who are not even Asian stuff who are going to come to your church and you're in it together. And God is going to work through this body of Christ where Christ is the head and we submit to one another. And we will have to see this new vision, new imagination together. Yeah. And it will change.
And be open to a new expression of what the church will look like.
Most
right?
definitely. Yeah. It's just the hard part has been, I hate to say it, sometimes it's come back to the patriarchy, where it's just like, as long as father or grandfather or great-grandfather is still there, that's what we're going to do. But what we need is for father, grandfather, great-grandfather to model, how do I submit to someone else in this family?
Yeah.
And of course, we still respect father, great-grandfather. We want that. We want to make sure we're doing this together. But it will take that kind of, I think, and I just think that's the expression of what the gospel is.
Sure.
I'm not sure that was on the radar in the past, but now more than ever, it's on the radar. What does it look like for Jesus to be Lord in this changing, you know, context?
Right. You know, as we kind of finish off this episode, I think this is the perfect time to talk about where is this all headed? You know, what does the future of Canadian Asian churches look like? How do you guys see where it's going? What do you think are some of the defining factors? And maybe even some examples of some expressions of it that you guys have seen now of how that future is breaking in.
I think we were talking about this. I think, well, one possibility, you know, it's a very valid possibility, is churches being planted that wouldn't see themselves as immigrant-based churches anymore.
Mm.
We'll have more Canadian multicultural churches that are, you know, multicultural under Christ, not under Canada as multicultural. And they're learning what that means. And they may start looking like, you know, Japanese first. They may start looking like Taiwanese first or something like that.
Right.
But they are intentionally including other people, not just in their congregation, but in leadership. And that will take time. That'll take discipleship. That'll take people to be on the same page theologically too, I would assume.
Sure.
And we see some expressions of that. Off the top of my head, there's Tapestry in Vancouver. I know started off as a Chinese church, the TAP. And now they're like a multi-site kind of multicultural church in that area. And I could also think of Flow Ministries with Louis Leung. And it's just like they're doing kind of like house church movement. I think I just love how they've incorporated. Yeah, I'm giving them a shout out here, but how their church is like, I think it's like at home, at play, at work. And that's how they believe they are the church.
Right.
And they're doing that as house churches. And I think they're predominantly still Asian, but they're engaging their neighborhoods.
Right.
Reaching to people that are not Asian. And you could just see it in how they engage in those three spaces.
And even the form, you know, with Flow Ministry, like they do house churches in certain contexts, but they also do a lot of other stuff that engages with a lot of different people. You know, they partner with Paint Lounge and they run this kind of music, arts kind of gathering. And the hopes is to form church out of it. And so I think like the future of Canadian Asian churches I think the form is going to begin to look different. You know, some of them will be planted. Some of them, you know, like starting off with what is God doing in the neighborhood? What are some of the passions that people have? Like who knows? Maybe there'll be a softball church. I don't know.
Cornerstone. Community church, like being a community center church, that they are the church as a community center.
Right.
Stuff like that. Like that's a new form of being church, reaching out to people in different ways.
I still think, though, like the future of Canadian Asian churches, that there will still be this kind of interesting subculture second gen churches.
Right.
Because I think there's still, like with the second gen, that is still deeply entrenched within their own kind of, I guess, mother culture. They're still trying to figure out their identity. They will still gather together and there will still be these churches that are like, yeah, we're mainstream, but we still do English. Everything is in English. Mm-hmm. We're still welcoming to everybody, but we will still look and feel like a second gen, you know, put your Asian title church.
Right.
I think that's up to every community to think through that. And it may mean staying within your framework and trying to help with the renewal of it, or also, you know, God may be leading you to go out to the farthest, you know, beyond Judea and Samaria. You know, what does that look like? And we were even, I think, talking right before this podcast started about people who are now sensing the call from God to go back to their, you know, go back to their homelands.
Yeah, yeah.
Their country of origin. Yeah. Right? Like,
or even the people who, you know, are out there who need the gospel.
Exactly.
That are from your own, you know, roots.
But I think what's the key is that we'll... the Canadian Asian church be faithful to the mission that God's called them here and beyond as well. But first here,
right,
where they live and where they do life.
You know, before we end off this podcast, we're going to give you guys a takeaway box, something that is helpful for you guys to consider and think about, especially as we look to the future of what a Canadian Asian church will look like. So maybe we're going to start with Shu and ask him what is some helpful approach in moving forward.
Number one thing I think that's on a very practical way is talk to your pastor. I think a lot of people, they don't actually necessarily talk to their pastor about some of why they're doing what they're doing, or even the pastor's understanding of what's going on. You know, I went to a Chinese church downtown for like 26 years of my life. It wasn't until I talked to my pastor where I started actually seeing, oh, there's a bigger thing than just, you know, what I saw in front of me.
Sure.
I started to see the bigger picture or the history behind things and why things were happening. And that made me start to become more curious about things. And I think asking the better questions instead of just being frustrated with what was in front of me.
Right, yeah.
And as you get deeper into the gospel, as you learn about more what's going on and why things happen, I think this, you know, the point of this podcast episode today, you start to see, oh, this is why things are the way they are. And instead of just deconstructing things, how can I help be part of the reconstruction? How do I be part of now doing this together with my church family? And, you know, hopefully it doesn't take, I get so frustrated, I'll go somewhere else to do this.
Right.
You know, but I'm still willing to do this with people, have the dialogue. And to be honest, I've seen so many people leave Asian churches because they're like, oh, you know, can't deal with this pastor or
sure,
this leader.
This one issue or yeah.
But it's like, I hope there was, you know, time to dialogue, to make sure the relationship is right, make sure we're not coming from it from just a place of we think injustice is always on us or something like that. But no, we're like, we're in this together. We're going to keep having this dialogue and, you know, and point people to this podcast, you know, to,
there you
to
go.
Have this discussion, you know?
Yeah. And Bernard, what is your takeaway box in terms of where can we be going with all this?
It really begins with a posture of openness in dialogue and discussion, and not necessarily just, you know, the rebellious younger generation talking to your pastor, but just perhaps it's even just pastors talking to pastors. You know, like there's so much that we can actually learn from the generations and the histories, but also, you know, the hopes and dreams of younger pastors that are coming out.
As well as having a new imagination and discerning together,
yeah.
Right?
But without these safe spaces where people can really offer, you know, what Jesus has been doing in shaping who they are and his church, like it's going to be hard to move forward. And I think it begins with these difficult first steps of conversing.
Sure.
And it might mean like, you know, like stepping out into places that, you know, people aren't used to, you know, why the passions, you know, to shape who they are, why the convictions, like what led there and begin to craft a new way. And I think part of it too is to recognize that we're not a church that tries to build up as big as possible. We are a church that is always called to send.
Mm.
And, you know, I forgot who it was. It could be Rainer. It could be somebody who said, you know, it's the marker of a church isn't its seating power, but its sending power. And I think with the future of the church, this will need to be a part of its ethos, because we're actually, believe it or not, we're on the same team.
Right.
So,
right,
you know, we're working towards the same kingdom, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you guys so much for joining us today. We'd love to hear from you, so please connect and hit us up on Facebook or Twitter, or contact us through email. We'd love to hear your feedback and your comments and how you are engaging with the content of this episode. Let us know also how we can be engaging this conversation in a better way, or doing this podcast in a better way. And be sure to join us next time when we're going to be talking about issues of inherited churches, inherited ministries, with our good friend Kevin Uetta. All right, thank you guys so much, and you've been listening to the Canadian Asian Missional Podcast. We'll see you next time. Bye.